Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, Rangers. It's me, Jackie Cation. Welcome to the Dork Forest. It's 2024. Let's do this. Here's the credits, of course. Mike Rickberg sang that song at the beginning, and he wrote that song, and he sang it with Sarah Cohen, his wife. And he will sing the Mexican Hat Dance at the end of the program. Also, Patrick Brady, still putting this together. Video, audio, all of it. He's amazing. So, and Vilmos doing JackieCationStore.com. Squarespace is doing the regular Jackie Cation page, and I'm thinking of moving the Dork Forest and DorkForest.com away from WordPress because it's driving me nuts. But those are the credits. But if you go to JackieCation.com, you can get Dork Forest merch. You can get my stand-up merch. You can get my stand-up CDs and DVDs, which you'd have to have devices for those. You can also see videos and find out any number of things. I have another podcast called The Jackie and Laurie Show, but The Dork Forest is the flagship. 18th year, we're doing it, you guys. You can go to my Bandcamp or my YouTube for extra content. Please donate, is what I'm saying. It's 2024, and I think we've been in this long enough. Why don't you guys, everybody send me $100? That's what I'd like you to do. You can PayPal me. There's links all over the pages. You can Venmo me at Jackie Cation. You can find me at a stand-up show and hand me a sweaty wad of 20s. Do something. But I love doing the show. I would love to make some money, is what I'd like to do. In other news, I'm sure there's more things that I should talk about, but I can't think of them. But let's listen to who's going to dork out about something, because that's my favorite part. Thanks for listening, you guys. You're all great. Let's get into the show.
Oh my gosh, I'm sitting in the dark in a place in San Francisco in a hotel room. Welcome to the Dork Forest, Rangers. Today's guest, Sarah Hester Ross, comic, musician, sings with the power of the sun. I watched the special, or shall we say I watched clips of it. I don't want to lie.
I appreciate the honesty. I love that.
And my mother-in-law will have it on. She will have it on. Even though, because Lori Kilmartin was like, okay, Sarah Hester Ross is on the show. Before I start taking up her hour with what I want to talk about, let me tell she's going to have a show on at the Edinburgh Fringe, or Edinburgh, however you people are pronouncing it.
Edinburgh.
The Fringe Fest. Yes, Fringe Fest. It's going to happen. It's over there in Scotland. Mm-hmm. And Sarah Hester Ross will have such a thing. Her Instagram is Sarah Hester Ross. It's in the notes. It's SarahHesterRoss.com. The name of her special, which is on Apple TV and Amazon Prime from Comedy Dynamics, is called Don't Mess with Redhead. And these are all attainable goals. Get out there, watch them, see the things, learn to sing along.
Yes, please.
That's it. Okay, and now welcome to the show. My mother-in-law has been watching a lot of comedy specials. And weirdly enough, she didn't know about Amazon having them. So, and we don't have Apple TV, but now she is recently, because Lori Kilmartin was like, why haven't you seen mine? And I'm like, well, it's triggering enough that it's constantly comedy going on in my house. But
that's awesome. I love that.
But I'm sure she'll find you. And then, and I could also point her in that direction.
Steer her towards it. Yes.
Yes. All the things. So do you prefer Sarah or Sarah Hester? Who's calling you? What are people doing?
Well, oh my goodness. Ross was my married name. And I had some, musical theater IMDb credits under Ross. And so when I got divorced, I just kept it. Hester is my maiden name. Sarah is fine. But I actually was called Hester from a very young age into adulthood because Sarah was like the number one girl name in the 80s. I was born mid-80s. I'm an elder millennial myself. And so I had a Sarah in every grade. So I was called Hester for a really
quite
long time.
So
I love it when people call me Hester. It's nice, but I cringe when people call me Miss Ross, and I'm like, but that's like internal right. trauma, you know. So
I'm gonna call you Hester. That's what's
Thank
gonna happen.
You. I love that. Right. Ooh, we're
I'm
getting
on board.
Jackie's only friends call me Hester. So Jackie, you are now my friend.
We're friends now.
We're friends now.
A lot of people don't know. Well, welcome to the Dork Forest, where friends get to talk about the things that they love. And one of the things you love is interesting because I'm fascinated. It's TV shows where we went with. Let's go with the main one that I kind of want to talk about, which is Sex and the City.
Sex and the City, yes.
Right. Sex in the City. We're all doing that. Sex and the City. That seems, I don't know, inclusive. So I've seen a little bit of it. It's Sarah Jessica okay. Parker.
Yes.
It's the four ladies and yes. they're getting some action. They're supposedly in their 30s and early 40s at the time. And right. There's a lot of drinking. What is it?
The show opens with her being 32 years old.
Okay.
And she's living in the city. And it's so absurd, Jackie. It's so absurd. Like, you think about it. Like, she's 32 years old. She has she pays $750 for a rent-controlled apartment in Upper Manhattan. And it's like, this is so make-believe. It's like not even funny. But she spends
right.
thousands and thousands of dollars on shoes. And it's,
right.
it's hilarious. And so you have to, if you haven't watched Sex and the City, first of all,
okay.
what are you doing? Why?
Right.
Why not? Why
and
not?
Grain of salt. And grain of salt.
Yes, definitely. But it's one of my yearly routines. I watch Sex and the City every year.
On the how many seasons are there?
There's seven.
Okay. Does that mean that there are 140 episodes, like 20 episodes a season, or?
No, there's definitely not 20. I think actually in the last okay. season, I think there's only like eight.
Okay.
But I mean, there's still like a lot. It takes me about, I don't know, maybe like 3 or 4 weeks to watch
okay.
the whole show over. And again, I have like a rotation of shows that I do this with. Gilmore Girls is actually in my rotation right now. Like I'm watching oh. it right now.
Okay.
For probably the ninth time.
Seven seasons of that too, I believe, right? Seven or eight.
Yes. And people, when I tell people this, they're like, how do you do this? I like to watch TV on my phone while I'm getting ready. So I like to watch
okay.
shows that I've already seen that I don't have to like focus on, but like, you know, things like that. So that's why I rewatch shows that I love so much. But Sex and the City is like one of my top. So,
okay. There are 94 episodes of Sex and the City.
That's actually not that much. That's not
that
many.
That bad. Yeah. Six,
I'm actually
and
surprised.
Six seasons. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it last aired in 2004. Uh-huh. And, there we go. They might be, and then I think there was some sort of reboot or something.
Yes, there's a reboot, and I tried.
Well,
I'm not a fan of it.
Right.
I don't know what's going
exist,
on with it.
Well, some things exist in a moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially
agreed.
Like $2,000 Jimmy Choo shoes. That feels like very much. I never even heard of a Jimmy Choo shoe until Sex and the City. So
that's fair. Probably I'm probably the same. But I started watching Sex and the City when it was on TV, and
in real
I had
time?
To like
yeah.
I had to like sneak it because my mom didn't let me watch HBO. Mm-hmm. And rightfully so. I mean, it's quite softcore porn. I mean, it is.
If 100%. I remember correctly, now let's see. When did it start? When did it? Do you think it started in the 90s? Is that when?
Yes, it 1998. Definitely started. Yes, it was definitely yeah. started in the 90s.
Okay,
and I was young. I was
what, like 12, like 10. I mean, it would have been
trying to do the math.
Here's the thing. In 1998,
I was definitely in middle school.
Okay, so you weren't a child. The kid that I babysat for, I don't know why I'm not going to let you talk, but here it is. We're friends. We're friends. In the late 90s, early 2000s, I did childcare in Los Angeles for two children whose mom was my day job boss. And they were pretty well off. And they also had a different life than I did growing up because I'm an elder Gen X.
Okay.
And so young Cole Schuster had HBO in his room. And so if he was being punished and he was sent to his room, he would just sit there and he was 7 or 8 years old. And he was like, there's boobs. And and I'd be like, I actually don't think this is cool. I don't mean to be a jerk about it, but what is this show? That's how I was introduced to Sex and the City. He was watching it. And he was 8.
Oh my gosh.
So it was a little early. Plus a lot of martinis. He's a jazz musician now.
Anyway. Oh, how cool.
Yes.
Wait. So martinis, he was drinking martinis at 8?
No, he was just watching Sex and the City. Oh, and those are the two things I remember is that there was a lot of sex. And so there were a lot of loose boobs just out in the world being seen, which is fine. They're just boobs. Who cares?
They are just boobs. They are.
And you're more excited about them if you want to touch them. I have them. I'm unmoved. So, yes.
They're sacks of fat. You know, what are you going to do?
I heard somebody used to do a bit about how nobody ever wanted to touch the sacks of fat at her legs.
Yeah.
And she's like, those things on my thighs? How come you don't want to get in there?
Maybe no if nipples? You draw a nipple on it.
Right.
It'll change people's minds. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hearts and minds.
Yeah. I mean, I really did. I started watching it at a young age and that's, it was bad. Like it was not bad. It was naughty because I was raised very religious. And so I had to sneak. I mean, I had to sneak things like Hocus Pocus because I wasn't allowed to watch like witchcraft or anything like that. So Sex in the City was definitely like a no-no, but I loved it. And I would watch it when it was on TV. And it is. It's I mean, there's no argument about it. It's softcore porn. Like the sex scenes in it are pretty intense at
some
times.
Are they steamy? Super steamy?
Oh yeah. Very steamy, very visual, very, you know, and I mean, a young
girl.
I'm
more interested now than I've
herself
ever.
In her body. I'm glad I could help. I'm glad I could help.
We have HBO. is it still on HBO?
It is, yes. Well, now it's Max or whatever.
Right. Whatever.
But yeah, so it's still there. And I just finished rewatching it a couple months ago. And it's absolutely fantastic. So I'm glad that I'm enticing you.
Yes, now I'm more interested.
Bringing you in.
Right. That's how I get my dorkdoms. And so it's Carrie, Miranda, and Charlotte? Isn't there four?
Charlotte and Samantha.
Oh, Samantha. She's the older one, if I remember correctly.
Cynthia, the actress's name is Cynthia. Cynthia Nixon, that's right. This is where you lose me when I dork out. I'm so bad with names. And with actor, like, and it's embarrassing because I know them.
We can just talk characters. We can just talk about their characters, and it'll be fine.
The why I know Cynthia Nixon's name so well is because there's like drama outside of the show with Sarah Jessica Parker and Cynthia Nixon. They despise each other, Cynthia just doesn't like Sarah Jessica Parker. It's why Cynthia Nixon was not included in the new update.
Oh.
She like refused to work with her ever again.
What? Okay. I mean,
know. It's so sad because in the show, in the show itself, Cynthia, Samantha and Carrie Bradshaw are like probably, in my opinion, the loveliest friendship.
Because they have the best of the friends. And Cynthia Nixon plays, so. Does she play the older blonde or does she play
she
the
does.
Redhead?
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
So.
Because that character, if I remember correctly, was sort of the funniest. She was the smart ass and the.
She is. And
she's the quippiest. Yeah.
And the sex, she's the one that's like more adventurous with sex. And well, even to this day, like, there was a trend going around of younger people watching Sex and the City today, like right now. And them getting on TikTok and being like, this show is terrible. Like, the only person that they really connect with is Samantha. And it's because Samantha is more, like, open-minded. She's not super judgmental. She is like, live your life. But the other three are kind of rigid. And, you know, granted, it was the 90s. And they're like, they talk about being bisexual in an episode, like a stream of episodes. And they're kind of close-minded about it. And it's just remembering, it's like, this is like early 2000s, babes. Like, people were joking about being bisexual is like, oh, Tina Fey has this bit about being bisexual is like, no, you're just selfish. Like,
you want all the things, right? That was the bit at the time. Yeah,
exactly. And so, and now it's kind of taboo to like be super judgmental about that kind of stuff.
We've leapfrogged so many. We've gotten so open-minded so quickly. Yep. I mean, I remember trying to watch Will and Grace now.
Oh, and I know.
But I will say this about Will and Grace. It did the hard work of making it palatable to people who didn't know any gay people and didn't want to know any gay people and didn't think gay people were real or human or any of that.
Right.
You know, it's just sort of and it actually it isn't easy to watch Archie Bunker. You know, it's not, you know, or those shows that have very basic, you shouldn't be a racist.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be a sex, you know, where you're like, so sad, too bad. Yeah. They may not hold up, but that doesn't mean that they didn't sort of change the world in a little way. And I think that Sex and the City might have done that. Yeah.
I think Sex and the City did that very much for women just in general to be more outspoken about their sexuality. You know, it is very surfacey when it comes to fashion and relationships. Not a lot of, and they tried to open the door because this new spinoff. And now I can't remember what it's called because it's really bad, but Miranda becomes gay. Miranda is now a lesbian. And I think it was really, the idea was there. I just believe the execution was not great.
Right. And the movies, it sort of lapped itself and it ended up like, because the first three seasons, according to what I've heard on the scuttlebutt, were like groundbreaking and really, really interesting. But things like Mr. Big, where in that now, when you look at that character, you're like, what are you, Hester Prynne?
Yeah.
And you're just like, your name's Hester. And,
I know. I love that you did that. That's lovely. Yeah. That's full circle right there.
And full circle. And yeah, so there's one other question. And then I kind of want to go with sort of your favorite episodes and stuff. And my main question is you know that there's that, which one would you be of the four that they always do? They do that question of which of the four women do you most relate to?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. If you're a Carrie or a Charlotte or a Samantha or and that's, you're asking me, right?
Yes.
I would say that I have to be between Carrie and Samantha. Only reason I say that I am a Carrie is because I feel I am super annoying, and I feel like Carrie is probably one of the most annoying people on the face of the planet. And she's so fucking annoying. Am I allowed? I'm sorry.
Please.
Okay.
No, podcast. Good. Fuck it up.
All right, great.
fuck it up.
She's so incredibly annoying, but like in a very relatable way. Not in the shoe shopping. I'm very Jew when it comes to like spending money, so I can't relate to her on that. But but she is just so selfish and so self-indulgent. And it is just like, even to the point where there are times where I find myself feeling bad for the men that she's with, because she's like, I'm like, bitch, come on.
I did want them to be nicer to the men. And I did want the men, because the men, one of the cool things though, is the men are not particularly well fleshed out.
Yeah.
Like they
not.
Tend to be kind of two dimensional.
Yes. And I think that they almost have to be, because it was so quick. Like very clearly, like they are not important. And you could tell when the writers were like showing you multifaceted sides of the men that they were going to be like serious contenders, like in their relationships with the women.
Okay, right, because they would give him like another, yeah, they'd give him another angle or something.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's awesome.
So, that was kind of like, oh, that took away the surprise a little bit of that. I'm not sure.
You didn't notice it at the time.
Yes, right, yeah.
I mean, this is 2004. In the 20th viewing of this, of this
now
program.
I see what you're doing. I see you.
Yes.
Crazy writers.
I see the tool.
Yeah.
So do you have favorite episodes from the seasons?
Yep. Yes. Probably my favorite episode is the episode where Miranda is training for the marathon. And okay. I think I pick my favorite episodes from lines that I quote all the time.
Okay.
And I think that's how I do it. But I quote this line literally probably once a day. And I don't know why it stuck with me so fervently, but it's this episode where they talk about eating ass.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Very popular topic of young comics right now. A lot of ass talk.
Yeah, well, ass is very big right now. And they actually talk about that in the episode. Samantha does this thing where, Miranda is seeing this. I think he's just a runner with her. He's training. And they go back to her place and he eats her ass. And she starts talking about it with her friends. And she's like, I don't know. Am I supposed to, like, get into this? And Samantha's like, there's something going on with the ass right now. And it's just so fun. It's so fucking funny.
Oh, it's so introspective. Like, she's just like, there's something happening.
There's something with men in the ass right now. They're really into it. And I love that because it's very topical, even though it was, I think, this was actually later. I think this is probably like season 4 or 5. So it's later. Charlotte's married at this point. But anyway, that conversation is just so funny. And so I love it. but the line
does she
that
learn,
I,
does she run? Does she run the marathon in it? I don't know why I need to know that.
She does end up running the marathon, but not in this episode. She's just training for it.
Okay.
So the line that I quote literally once a day is where she offers the guy a back rub and he's like inching his butt into her face to try to like get her to eat him. And she yells out, I don't want to do that. And that is the line. I don't know why, but I literally quote it every day. And in that tone specifically, like, I don't want to do that. And he's like, well, you could have said something before I had my ass in your face. Anyway, it's just, it's the best. I love the episode. There's a part, like Charlotte is this like super uptight, prissy girl. And in that conversation, they were like, do you have to reciprocate? And Samantha's like, absolutely not. You do not have to eat. And Charlotte is like, really? Because she eats her husband's ass. And it's so clever and so cute and funny. She's like, what? I'm married. I do everything. And it's just like,
if he needs it, I guess I'm there.
It's so great. Anyway, that's my favorite episode.
That is your favorite episode.
It
that's
is.
That's fascinating. And
I'm not a super proponent. For ass, do what you gotta do. I'm not into kink shaming at all. So it's not necessarily the ass talk, but
literally just that episode. It's just funny. And you enjoy.
But it's liberating. Like in the sense, not to be super pluggy or whatever. I talk a lot about sex in my and specifically women's issues with sex and what women deal with in sex. And I think Sex in the City is probably one of my inspirations to be so freely open to talk about it, and to encourage women to talk about it, because growing up, it was so taboo. It was so dirty. It was so that's not ladylike. And I just love the idea of getting out of that trauma, first and foremost, but also hypocritical. Like men are allowed to talk about sex. Men are allowed to talk about their dicks. Men are allowed to, and it's okay, but women can't. And it, at the end of the day, it's all about controlling us. It's all about putting us in a box and not letting us be free and experience what people should be able to experience.
Yes. And I would posit this about sex. It's always embarrassing. If you want to be embarrassed, you can be. Because it's not dignified.
Yeah.
You're having sex.
Yeah.
There's going to be noises. There's going to be positions. Yep. There's going to be moisture.
Queefing. There's going to be it. And, that's so funny. I also love this about Sex and the City is that they talk about the embarrassing moments. They talk about I've peed a little during intercourse, but the guy didn't really notice. So I just kept on going. And it's just like those things in reality can and will be embarrassing, but they're life. It's sex.
It happens. It has to be pretty big deal to stop having sex because someone made a noise or something got a little sloppy. And you're just like, we'll finish it up and then we'll back up. We'll go get towels. Yeah. It'll be fine. And
I know. Just be prepared. Have towels on the side of your bedside.
Yeah.
And just keep going, babe. Keep going.
Right. Keep going. Have a good time. And if you're not laughing during sex, there's trouble, I think, to some extent, just because it should be fun and funny.
Oh, agreed. And,
yeah. And unless you're somehow role-playing grumpy people, which that's between you and your God.
That could be fun. That could be sexy.
Sure. If that's the sexy times you want to have, you enjoy that. But I am consistently trying to make Andy laugh, and he
me too.
Right back at me, right?
You have an Andy?
Yeah. Do you have an Andy?
I do have an. Well, I don't call him Andy, but his name is Andrew.
There you go. It's a very popular name. Yes.
Everybody, actually, my ex-husband's name was Andrew as well. So apparently, I have a type.
You have a there's a, I well have, you didn't I have to change have an the monograms.
King. I know that worked out perfectly for me.
I actually hope his last name isn't also Ross. That'd be weird.
It's not. That would be weird. That would be kind of scary, actually. But, I love making Andrew laugh. like especially it like in like sexual things. Yeah. Like, I mean, there's a time and a place for it, but like every once in a while, I love that.
Yes. So the thing about the clothing, and there's so much fashion to it.
Yeah.
Did you ever watch the show and think, I got to figure out how to get that those clothes?
I wasn't really into fashion when I started watching it. And I still probably to this day don't think I understand high fashion as people in high fashion would. I appreciate it. I think it's beautiful. I love the artistic or the artistry of it. But sure. As far as like wanting to spend my money on a one-time dress, I do that for my shows.
Right. That's costuming and that's and that's sometimes you could rent.
Yes, yes. But as far, but I also like to do, again, plugging my show and right, my comedy special.
By the way, it is I Sarah do a lot of, Ross.
I do a lot of costume changes and I love I love changing my costume. Like when I see like shows, I was very inspired by people like Bette Midler and Lady Gaga. Like I'm not as like my costumes are not as wild as Gaga's, but the fact that she like changes outfits in her shows, like that's very much I like doing that. And so I have to have tearaway. So high fashion is not really like
right. I love that you have tearaway. That I sounds do. Because there's a comic, Fred Armisen, who on Saturday Night Live, right?
I've heard of him.
And when he got Saturday Night Live, we had he's been on an episode of The Dork Forest. Feel free to figure out which episode, Rangers. You got the powers.
Oh, that's
cool. of the Google. But he always said that he was jealous that I got to do The Road. And I said, oh my gosh, you could totally do The Road. You're on Saturday Night Live. It would be fun. And he's like, Jackie, no one is going to tolerate the costume changes. And
see, that's where I disagree.
But if he had tearaway, is that what you do during the show? Yeah.
I do. I do costume changes in my shows. it's that's very interesting because when I am on the road, and I do comedy clubs, I understand that what I'm doing, people are not expecting me. They're not expecting the music.
There's much more production than regular stand-up than just non-interactive, you know, because you're doing, it's almost like it's not burlesque, but I mean, there's so many costumes and so much stuff to it that it has that theatrical vibe that this one with this high.
Exactly.
I barely move, but it's very different. But it's all stand up, right?
Yeah.
They've come to see you.
I appreciate that. And I really do. As coming from an actual stand up, I don't call myself a stand up comic.
Oh, interesting. What do you call yourself?
A musical comedian.
Oh, okay. Oh, just sort of another, just a comedian, but with the addendum, just so people, it's not a bad thing to do because then there is some warning.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like people are coming to a comedy club and they're expecting a stand-up comic. And well, it's also because I respect the artistry of stand-up comedy. Like I want other comics to know that I don't think what I am doing is what you are doing, because what you are doing is another level. Like, you know, just the fact
you
of you saying
literally
that.
Look in the mirror and picture me saying that to you.
Sure.
Because and quite honestly, what you're doing is another level. Of
exactly.
Yeah.
And vice versa. But but I always want to like give credit where credit is due. But I'm going into comedy clubs, you know, which
right.
I don't necessarily think that I belong in comedy clubs, but that's just where I am well, right now.
This isn't on you. Comedy club audiences need to YouTube Google the name of the comic they're going to see, because then you won't accidentally stumble in and see Nick DiPaolo.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, yeah. it's, I mean, the thing is you might like Nick DiPaolo
yeah.
and you'll come in and you're going to see my crystal clutching ass, and that's not going to be for you either. So take a heartbeat and you have a phone and go, I wonder. Yeah.
I kind of wish, and this is new, this comedy okay. clubs for me is new.
Okay.
I've only been doing it for about 2 years. So most of the time I am a theater kid through and through, grew up doing theater. And when I do my own like one woman shows, it's not in comedy clubs. It's in like here in Vegas. I do it in theaters. So I understand but what I would really love it is, and I hope that I'm helping with this a little bit, is opening the box of comedy.
Yeah.
Because I do feel like comedy clubs in general and comedy audiences, they want their comedy in like this. And if it's not like this, they're like, "That well, we don't like it."
Yeah,
but I'm like, there's so many, there's so much, so many levels to what comedy could be and what it
yes.
is.
I think that there's comedy gatekeepers like that or hall monitors
yeah.
or whatever you want to call
hall
them.
Monitors. I
where
like that.
They're like, they're kind of nerds. They're dorks for that. And they have a very mm-hmm. narrow view of exactly what they think is stand-up comedy. But
right.
Maria Bamford, was it John Lovitz who came up
oh,
to her
yeah.
once at the Improv and said to her, "Do you consider what you're doing stand-up comedy?" And to Maria Bamford. And she said, "Well, I'm in a stand-up comedy club, so yes." And but it's sort of like alcoholism. If you all you have to do is say that you are an alcoholic and you're an alcoholic. If
yeah.
I in my opinion, if you think that you're a stand-up comic, you're a stand-up comic. It's
well.
I may not like it. I may love it more than other kinds, you know, but I do
right.
think that there
yes.
is a definite, there's a, it's linear. It might even be a globe. I don't know.
Well, that's very, very kind of you, because I know that is not a common denominator amongst stand-up comics.
It can be grumpy and judgy. And there's like, of course, the traditional war between improv and stand-up. But
which is so sad. It's so sad.
It is
I love them both. But that's coming from a theater girl, which if like in the sense of if I'm entertained by it, I like it. Like,
yeah.
And if I don't, if I'm not entertained, then I'm like, then it's not for me. It doesn't mean that it's bad. That doesn't mean that it like, it's like, this is garbage and this is not your,
right.
but. It's
the negative stuff is coming from inside the house. I mean, it's
yeah,
definitely
yeah.
coming from sort of the straighter, more traditional stand-up comics
mm-hmm.
who are judging more production and other kinds of. I was once watching, and I probably told this story at Rangers, but I'm watching Mime with Maria Bamford in Melbourne,
okay.
Australia.
Okay.
And it's two Japanese guys doing Mime. And it was so good. And at one point during this show, I leaned over and I said, "It's amazing, but what would like Hollywood, what would they do with it?" And
yeah.
Maria
yeah.
didn't take her eyes off the stage. She just leaned over and said, "It's not broken, Jackie. It's just great. Just let it be what it is." And
that
I was
so
like,
lovely.
It's the greatest. I mean, it just, it's very sane. It's the,
yeah.
you know, she talks about how she has the mentals, and it turns out she's the sanest one of us all. So let me say this, Rangers, we are talking with Sarah Hester Ross. It's sarahhesterross.com and at Sarah Hester Ross on Instagram and all the things. She has a new special out called Don't Mess with a Redhead on Apple TV and Amazon Prime. Find it wherever you go. And she's got a friend show coming up in Edinburgh this summer. And So here's the thing. I don't want to. Is there anything else you want to say about Sex and the City? Because I actually have a clothing related question about the other show.
Absolutely not. I mean, I could talk all day about Sex and the City, but we can move on to my next favorite obsession. So,
which is kind of a comparable show in a way, in the fact that I think it is also from the 90s, right?
Yes, and it is.
Yeah. So it's Gilmore Girls, which mm-hmm. I was obsessed with myself. My brother Scott owns all six seasons on DVD.
Oh, and, my God.
Because all of my brothers are super gay straight men. And but I tried to rewatch it because it's on the streaming.
Yes, and yeah. Well, they actually just took it off Netflix like a couple months ago, and now you can only get it by purchasing. I bought it years ago. I bought it years ago. So
right. I have the DVDs myself, so but her clothes were the ones that always made me go, wait, how is she a single mother? And then I found a website in the late 90s where you would type in the name of the TV show and the character, and it would tell you where to get the clothes that they were wearing on the show.
How cool is that?
I know. It was a $150 t-shirt that I wanted that she was wearing. And I was like, oh, I guess I can't have that. I have a weird job where I'm an admin assistant.
Oh, I guess I can't. Oh, I guess I should not.
But why does she get to is what it also kind of made me mad because I was like, it doesn't fly. The house is too big.
This is where we say this is Hollywood make-believe. Like, you're right. A single mother who like worked as a maid and then all of a sudden like has this huge house and all this land and like what? Bitch, please.
Yeah.
And how like fervent she was about doing everything herself and not taking anything from her parents. Like,
I kind of call bullshit on it. Yeah. By the way, Gilmore Girls still on Netflix for a hot sec. So if everybody wants to get into seven seasons, you knock yourself out.
That's crazy. Yep. They must have just put it back on.
They might have, because sometimes people get all sad.
Yeah. Because
and then
I literally looked up like weeks ago. I looked
right
to see
when
if
you
it
were
was
gonna
on there.
Start again. Yes.
Well, again, I had already purchased it, but I like to, this is so silly, but I like to watch it on streaming so it shows, so they get paid.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, no, that's true. I love a used bookstore, but I also like to buy a book that I love new again and again and again and give them to people so that the book people get the money. They're called authors. I like
They're
the authors to get.
Authors.
You know.
Oh,
the authors.
Those people that write books. You know.
The one that wrote the book, they should get another $2 or whatever. I can't tell you how many copies of the Thursday Murder Club I've purchased for people.
Really? Okay. I love that.
There's going to be a TV show on Netflix or a TV movie with Helen Mirren, Pierce Brosnan, Ben Kingsley. Yes. And a fourth very famous character actor from England, whose name is escaping me.
Okay.
But it's about pensioners who solve murders. Because why wouldn't it be? They're British. Why wouldn't they solve murders? That's all those people do. Yes.
That's what they do. It's what they're made for. Yeah.
That's what the monarchy has trained them for. Yes.
I love that. Artists supporting artists. You know, we got to do it.
I have something that I've always said from just, am I going to forget it? I am going to forget it. It's a line that I use all the time to describe something, because they had their own language, Lorelai and her daughter, whose name I'm escaping. Rory, that's it. Where essentially Rory's the adult in that situation. But I do love that show because it's super well written. Like, it's very quippy.
Amy Sherman is one of my favorites. I love her. I've loved her since Mad TV. Her writing gets not shat on, but like in a negative way because they're fast talkers, and that's how she writes them. She writes them on purpose.
As opposed to what? The West Wing guy?
I guess. I don't know.
That guy is super speedy. Yeah.
She also wrote The Marvelous Miss Maisel. I don't know if you watched that.
Oh, right. No. And I know people who write for it, but yes.
Yeah. Same thing. Really fast talking jokes back and forth. Right. And, you know, she's always been she's the co-creator and writer of it. And I'm just such a fan. The writing is just so fast and funny and quick. And that's one of the things that you have to watch the show over and over again, because you'll miss a joke and you'll hear it the next time and you're like, who the fuck are they even talking about? And then you'll look it up and you're like, oh my gosh, it's very, very time, like, it's so crazy. Right.
It's a time capsule of pop references.
100%.
That's right. Yeah. And quite honestly nails them. Because I remember just watching it and going, oh, I don't even know who that is, but I know it's hilarious to the seven people who just laughed their heads off. And so,
yeah,
which
exactly.
I just admire. Yeah.
I do too. I do too. Yeah. Especially for a popular television show. You think that, you know, you need to broaden your comedy or whatever, or, you know, dilute it or whatever. And she doesn't. She definitely does not.
Pre-streaming, she was writing for herself.
Exactly.
And writing for whoever wanted to watch it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it turns out we did.
which I find very similar to, like, things like Family Guy. And, you know, like, I don't know. She was the voice of Lois, but I don't know if she wrote for them as well, Family Guy. Oh, but
okay. I did not know that. That's good for her.
Yeah. So I'm not sure, but that's very Family Guy Simpsons-esque, where they wrote what they were laughing at the time.
Right. Right.
And Gilmore Girls did that too, even if the audience, if it was so quick. But I think, because the storyline was so relatable, mother-daughter issues, that's kind of what got me. Like, it's very relatable for me, the distance between, you know, her childhood and her wanting to raise her daughter. Like, I don't have any kids, but that mother-daughter relationship between Lorelai and her mother is very relatable. Very
right. Just a lot of hands on, a lot of meddling. Yeah.
And it's so funny because today a lot of people are, I don't know if this is a common thing, that they're like, oh, they're on the side of her mother. Like, they see Lorelai's character as ungrateful or annoying. And she is at times. She is.
Sure.
But like, people who say that, it's very obvious they don't have a difficult relationship with their mother. Because if they did, you would not be saying that, like, at all. And because I do. I have it's a very complicated love, with my mother.
Parents are very challenging. My father, Elliot Cation, friend of the people, every day's a holiday, every meal's a feast. He is a piece of work.
Yeah.
And to come to grips with the fact that he is just a person trying to raise children.
Yeah.
Right. Like, because my father's very much, I do there was an old joke about how my father was a lot like radiation when we were children. We never saw him, but he affected all of our lives. And because he sort of, but there's a point in every what I liked about her relationship with her mom is that over the course of the show, and I do think this happens, is she begins to realize that her parents are people, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's that thing that happens, I think, when you get in your 30s and you have to go, well, I can't be mad at these people forever. I remember my stepmother saying, how did she put it? She said, if you were born in the rain, that's very sad. If you're 30 years old and you're standing in the rain, get the fuck out of the rain. She's like, you're 30.
Yeah.
And so there's just a point where you have to sort of realize that you're the adult in every situation, including with your parents.
Yeah.
You're like, well, they're supposed to be the adult. And you're like, they're just people. And they're as flawed as anybody. So, and they were probably raised by banana heads as well. So
I like the quote that, remember, this is your parents' first time living too. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, and I love that because they're going to make mistakes. Like, and they're making mistakes because of how they were raised, or not mistakes, but they're doing the best that they think they are doing.
Sometimes the best wasn't very good. Just by definition.
Right. Yes.
Right. And it doesn't mean that they weren't trying. It just means they failed. And we've all failed. And you're just like, well, that was terrible. And it actually hurt my feelings. So if we could not do that again, you don't have to. Yeah. I mean, some things my father, one of my brothers was as my dad. If he ever regretted anything, if he had any regrets, my dad goes, no. You and my brother Phil, his head almost popped off of him. He was like, you've been married 3 times. You have 6 children. You have no regrets. And my dad's like, what would be the point?
I'm jealous of that delusion. I'm jealous. I wish I was that delusional. I do.
Yeah,
I mean, I get what he's saying. Like, what's the point of regretting? You can't change it. But, you know, when you're talking about a parent and the sense of like, okay, well, maybe regretting affecting your children in a necessarily negative way could be one.
Right. Or you don't have to regret it. How about acknowledge it and apologize? Anything?
Yes.
Anything there. And my dad's like, what do you mean? He and I were at a Goodwill a couple of months ago because I go to visit him pretty regular because he's 87, and he wanted to go to the Goodwill. So we go to the Goodwill, and there was a football that was for sale, like 50 cents. And I picked it up, and I said, hey, Dad, can we have a quick catch so that I can say that we once played catch? and he was like, what? And I said, catch. And I threw him the football, and then he threw it back, and I said, how hard was that? Was that hard?
We did it.
No.
Yes.
No. It's
over
now.
Oh my gosh. you got, and that's so funny because, like, and as a comedian, I know you get this, but like joking about childhood trauma and like the darkness is so helpful.
It is
so healing and just like, because you're right. What are you gonna do? You can't change it, but acknowledging it and finding the humor in it is something that is really special for comics.
Just acknowledging it and just going, I will watch me reparent myself in front of you. How about that?
Yeah.
And he gets it. He doesn't, he's not completely unaware. I actually don't know if I believe that.
I was like, I don't think my mom gets it. Like I went no contact with my mom. About a year ago for a year. And it was
in an effort to rebuild, regroup.
I think it was an effort to show my seriousness about if we're going to have a relationship, things need to change. And I am no longer going to fight about it because fighting is pointless because she's not going to change. And at the end of the day, I don't necessarily need her to change. I just need her to respect me and what I am trying to do and what I believe and what I think, because I am now my own person. I am no longer believing or thinking things just because my mommy and daddy tell me to. which is what we all end up doing. And, you know, this is a hot take, a very hot take, but I, you know, they talk about like grooming is a big part, is a big conversational piece right now because everybody's obsessed with trans people and everybody's obsessed with drag queens. And it's just like, shut up. But that, like, the quote unquote word grooming is very popular. And hot take, I think every child is groomed. Every child is groomed because they are taught by their parents to think what they think and believe what they believe. That is grooming. That's the definition of grooming. and children have no say in this. And they also take it in. They believe it. Their parents are gods to them. So why would their gods lie to them? Why would their gods care about them? So why would they lie to them? So I am now realizing and coming out for the past, like, you know, 10 or so plus years that what I was raised, I don't believe and I don't think anymore. And that is very hard for my mother to understand.
Yes, but you've been given other information and you have a brain.
Yes.
And so you have come to a different conclusion.
Yes.
And that's all. I think the grooming that they're, of course, they've made it into this weird negative thing with children that aren't related to you. And you're like, yes, but Jeff Ross did that with a 15-year-old girl that wasn't related to him.
Yes.
And then sexy times happened. And I know her dad said it was okay, but guess what? When she was 27, she was like, that was weird.
That was weird, right?
That was weird, right? And
because she now has a fully formed brain, and as an adult to be like, hey, I was a child. That was weird.
That's weird. I've never looked at a 16 or 17-year-old young man and thought, I bet I could trick him into touching my bits. But I bet you I could, because I would be the adult in that situation. And Right. And his dad might be like, you got some. And that dad is also incorrect, because 10 years from now, that young man's going to be like, that was weird, right?
Yeah.
That was weird. That's not. And it doesn't matter if you're 32 and he's 20 and he's 17. Don't do it. I got a small PSA. You got another hot take. Leave children alone. 15-year-olds should touch other 15-year-olds. Let it all happen there.
It really is just that simple. It's just like, let 15-year-olds touch other 15-year-olds. Like,
right.
Done. Like,
end scene. We weeded off. So, do you have a favorite Gilmore Girls episode or a couple of those? What are one of your faves on those? I like it she's going out with the blonde guy. I liked it when. When she was dating Supernatural guy, I became a little frustrated. But I liked the tough kid.
Jesse?
Yeah, Jess.
I am team Jess all the way.
I am team Jess.
I think that he was the best. And I love that they bring him back at the end a little bit. And in the Netflix reboot where they have the 3 seasons of autumn,
again,
fall.
I tried to watch spring. That.
Oh, you didn't love it?
I didn't love it. Did you love it?
I loved it. Okay. I did.
Okay.
I did.
Well, okay.
And
maybe I'll try it again. Okay.
Just because I really love the mother at this age. I loved her after, you know, her dad passed away. And it's because he actually passed.
Right.
The actor.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Herman, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
He actually passed. And so they wrote him passing away in the show. And I really loved seeing her just like become an independent woman.
Yeah.
In her late, like, 60s. I loved that. I loved it because it just, it's another level of like, you know, what women have to go through, because statistically in most marriages, the men die before. And then, again, statistically, women do not remarry. They don't remarry because they're happy.
They're finally free. My grandmother, my grandfather died in like 1967, 68. Yeah. Yeah. My grandmother died alone, happily alone in, I believe, the early 90s. I can't remember what year she died. But she had like 40 years of her just getting to do whatever the hell she wanted to do.
And I love it. And that's what I think. I see her. She's this wealthy woman. She kind of dabbles in dating, but they don't really get into it because it's not that important. Her life, like, she is learning to be a person.
Yeah.
And because she was raised in this very rigid, which I love that they kind of touch on, because that's what Lorelai was running from. She didn't want to be in this rigid life of like wife, kids, like all this stuff. Like, she didn't want that. And so, but her mother didn't think that there was a choice. So she did it. And now she's living a life where she sees the joy that comes from independence and, you know, the money doesn't hurt. Obviously, she's rich, so that helps.
Right. That'll take the edges off, the sharp edges.
Yeah, 100%. But like, I just love that ending to her story. And so that's why I like the reboot. I'm not a big Rory fan after in college and on.
Graduated from high school. Not fun.
I think she's so fucking annoying. And she's so spoiled, and she's so like, girl, get a fucking life. Like, I just
anyway. She's just when she stopped hanging out with the high school kid, what was the Korean girl whose parents were awesome? I love those actors, the people who played her mom, the woman who played her mom.
Oh shoot, Lane. Lane is her name.
Lane, that's it. Yeah. So Lane and her mom were the best. And then that was, those first three or four seasons were my favorite seasons. And
they're great. They're great. But I mean, again, I really like Lorelai and Luke's story too. And I love that they don't really, I love the, now I can't think of the word, but the non-normal relationship that they end up having.
Oh, like, right, it's not, just sort of open-ish. It's kind
of. Yes, it's not typical, but they're in a relation, they're monogamous, but they're not like, I just love that because it's very non-happily ever after kind of vibe for like a popular television show, you know?
Right. Again, and just went with just a, we're going to live together forever. Like, you know,
And that's why I also like the reboot, because they don't deter from that. They don't like, you know, they stay steadfast with the Luke and Lorelai vibe. And I also really love that. But, you know, because they could have changed. They could have been like, oh, now we're married and we're having kids and blah, blah, blah. But it's like, no. This is who they are. And we're sticking to the plan.
That's awesome. So. And then being introduced to Melissa McCarthy. Oh. That was my introduction to Melissa McCarthy.
I know.
And she is a delight.
She just took off. I was loved that she came back a little bit. She had a cameo in the reboot.
Did she? Oh, good.
Just a tiny bit. Because she's a freaking movie star now. Like, she's like, so I get why they probably could not like necessarily.
The fact that she was willing
her
to do it was very nice of her.
I know.
Thank you very much, Melissa McCarthy. That was very sweet. Yeah. Probably because Amy Palladino, whatever, she probably
Amy
feels
Sherman
very
Palladino.
Sherman Palladian. That's it.
They probably have like a relationship. Yeah.
Yeah. Where she's like, you gave me my first big break and thank you very much. And I like how she wrote her where she ends up, you know, falling in love with the produce guy.
Yeah, I love
and
that
then
story.
They, and then they have a nice relationship, and it's nice.
I know. It's very cute. their whole thing. Melissa McCarthy is probably one of my favorite actresses just because I love that she's a big girl and she's a fucking Hollywood star. Mm-hmm. Star. Mm-hmm. She's a starlet. Yeah. And she's stunning and she's beautiful, but she gets so dirty and grimy in her movies. And she's very, you know, I love it. I think she's a brilliant comedy actress.
One of my two favorite buddy movies in the whole wide world. I have two favorite buddy movies, and one of them is The Heat.
Oh, I love it.
Which is Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy. And Melissa McCarthy's physical comedy in that movie, I laughed until I cried.
I know.
I watch that movie twice a year.
I love that.
I cry with laughter as she pulls that guy through the window. And she's just, I'm just like, what is happening? This is insane. Yeah.
One of my favorite of hers is when her and Bridesmaids, and the fact that her and her husband, her like real life husband,
yes,
get to be the two. And they're so gross and disgusting, but it's just
he's
so
in the heat too.
Is he?
She makes out with him in the bar.
Okay. I have to watch that movie again because I haven't seen it in a while, but I love Sandra
Bullock.
I'm
almost certain. I have that horrible. We have gone over the hour, of course, because we're talking about something that I also enjoy.
Yeah.
Sarah Hester Ross has a comedy special out, and it is called Don't Mess with a Redhead. It's on Apple. It's on Amazon Prime. And it's Sarah with an H. Sarah Hester. So two H's. Ross.
Two H's, two R's. Yeah.
That's it. On the Instagram.com. It'll be in the notes. Go see her at the Fringe Fest. Is that in August?
It is. I'll be there August 2nd through the 18th.
Wow. That's plenty of weeks.
Yeah, I have 11 shows. It's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for doing the show. I genuinely appreciate it. You're welcome. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
Hi, Adal. How was the show?
Well, it was a delight because it was with Sarah Hester Ross, who I don't know in real life. And she calls herself a musical comedian. Right. I think someone's heard her. Because she could just call herself a comedian because she's just a comic. But she happens to play the piano.
There's no just a comic. Come on.
Right. But she could be, I think, because she's very funny. I watched clips and there's a new age happening in the Dork Forest where a lot of PR people are like, I have these 1,900 guests who want to be on the Dork Forest. And I'm like,
do they?
Yes. So she's one of the people who had a PR person. So I've never met her, but she lives in Las Vegas.
You know, I think it's a good sign that the PR people want to have their people on your show.
Yeah, yeah. I'm on somebody's radar, right?
Yeah, yeah. You're on the PR people's radar, which means that at some point you'll get on the radar of the broader world, right?
Right. Though right now it's like Rangers, it's like Green Day in 1992. You're the only ones who know about me. Well played.
That's right. You knew her when.
It's a niche group.
You but liked her when she was cool.
Exactly. Now I'm trying desperately to sell out. And
we have limited amount of time. Come on, people. We got to sell out quick.
I have this to say. We talked about Sex and the City, and we talked about Gilmore Girls, which have
your
in common.
Favorite.
I love Gilmore Girls. I never watched Sex and the City, but they're both about a lot of sort of fancy clothes happening with people who shouldn't have that much money. And
I think the people in Sex and the City were all fairly rich.
I don't think anyone was Jimmy Choo rich. That's how I found out about Jimmy Choos, which are like $1,000
fancy
footwear.
Fancy shoes. Right.
Yeah.
Fancy shoes to make your feet look like something besides feet.
What did they look like?
The Jimmy Choos? They're wild. They're crazy.
Are they?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, cool.
They're fantastic shoes to make your feet look like something besides feet.
Interesting. We talked Sex and the City on the Broadscape. We didn't really get into it. We got to talk about one of her favorite episodes, but it was mostly just sort of the impact and how she watches all of the episodes every year.
Oh.
It's sort of like I used to read Lord of the Rings every year. It's been a couple of years.
Right. She watches the whole series every year.
And then the whole series of Gilmore Girls every year.
Oh, wow.
I think it stops the voices. Like, I think she's like doing one good a week, work.
A couple of weeks, maybe? And it would just take her all year to do it?
Well, I think she spends 3 months and then 3 months. And then has 6 months where she can
watch other things.
New. Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. That's actually pretty cool.
And she might just have them on in the background, too.
True, true.
Might be one of those.
Kind of the way you read Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, it's a skim.
In the background.
It's a bit of a skim.
Right.
Every time I reread The Lord of the Rings, I get a little bit more of the poetry. It's so beautiful.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, but her favorite episode, her favorite line was about ass eating ass. What? And, yep, it was, they were before the
trend.
Before the trend, it's everywhere now. Every millennial
is ass eating now.
Z or whatever the current youth, they're right. On board. But there was someone asked, I think it was Samantha, if he eats your ass, do you have to eat his ass back? And she said no. And then the one the real prim lady who's married was like, really? And then somebody else said, I do. And then she quoted her favorite line from the entire series that she says almost every single day, which is, no, I do not want to. And I might not be doing it right.
Is that, that's like her catchphrase?
It is Sarah Hester Ross's catchphrase.
I do not want to.
And I don't think she's always talking about eating ass. I think she's talking about other things.
Other things. Anything. It could be anything.
It could be anything that she does not wish to do.
No, I do not want to.
There you go. But in that tone of voice. So she lovety loves that.
Right. Can she sort of storm into somebody's apartment and no, I do not want to. And everybody turns around and says, hi, Esther.
Right. She prefers Hester, by the way, Sarah Hester Ross. She likes, she said that her, when she was a kid, she was always called Hester and she went with Sarah Hester Ross. And so some people call her Sarah, but her friends call her Hester.
I somehow intuited that.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're like
I don't
that.
Know how, but, I did. And, cause it's a great name, honestly.
It is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was a great episode and I enjoyed it thoroughly. So I'm going to say the thing I say to everybody, which is Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat, my hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Thank you. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?